Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die. Baby dear,
hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, Apocalypse, about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and Melopponia, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Hello, I am Weirdington Esquire, and I have been assured that I am a good boy. They asked, who's a good boy, and I looked around because I didn't know who they might be referring to, but it turned out it was me.
So good boy Weird, that's the new prefix.
A very good boy, I've been assured. Local sources are reporting.
That's good. So hey, we're back again, folks. We're getting closer. We are finally made it to Thunderhead 2020. Yeah, the worst arc of this entire story.
Oh man, that's
it's
okay.
Yeah,
it's, okay. That's a pretty high bar.
it is, but this is largely regarded by me and multiple other people who are still in this community that aren't psychopaths as the worst arc of this entire story, and that is saying a lot. After this, the story just becomes a like nonsense anime and like whatever. It's just a doofy fun ride, but this arc is terrible. It's a multi-layered, it's an onion made of garbage.
Before we crack into it, can you give us some insight into how you survived it the first time? Like, what is your recollection of your first encounter with this material?
So about this time I was basically just like soup, like the death of Lacuna was definitely like the death of my like investment and engagement in the story, because like personally I'm never a big fan of like character deaths, and if you're going to kill a character, you kind of have to do it with some panache and gravitas, and Somber certainly tries, but in their own shitty, chuddy, boring, lazy, maladapted way. So Lacuna dies in this nonsensical, insane way. Would be cool on paper, but it's so mushed with trying to be, like, better than the original story and also make a weird lore connection that doesn't make a lot of sense. So I was pretty burnt out by this point. This is book four is really when, like, the delays and hiatuses really started to go, like, a long time. It would go from a couple of, like, maybe a couple of months to, I think, like, the longest was, there was, like, a year or something like that without any release, or, like, one release or something like that. So it was really, really slow going. So the drip feed was just kind of easier to consume. Like, it wasn't a matter of, like, you're not getting what we're getting here, which is, like, full frontal, all of it at once, just wave after wave of garbage. It was, like, kind of just a thing that I could just do when it came out. And by, like I said, I was only really invested in the sense that, like, I wanted to see how it ended, because I had already come so far. Like, sunk cost fallacy was full in effect. I just wanted to see, like I didn't care about anyone in the store anymore. I just wanted to see what insane thing Somber could end the story on. And that's what kept me going.
And well, listeners, I have finally did it! I tricked him into doing the recap! It's personally the only thing that happened last week. Lacuna died, and along with it, our last connection to the source material. The timeline of the original story concluded.
I've been hosed! Can't keep getting away with this. That didn't even occur to me. Fuck. But yeah, I guess I did the fucking thing this time. But yeah, but going forwards, this arc is just, it's it's bad in a bunch of ways, but the main one is that this Thunderhead just isn't very exciting because it's very removed from the original story. It's this weird thing where it's like I always describe it as like DLC. Like that's what it comes to mind of. It's so far removed from the main plot in a way that it nothing that happens in it can really affect the rest of the story. Like they're literally off the map at this point. They're in the sky for fuck's sakes. Like there's nothing that they can do in the sky that really affects the rest of the story for the most part, and sort of vice versa. So it's this weird, like, self-contained little plot line, which could be really interesting in an interesting, like, a better written story. Like, the idea of just, like, sure, this is just a little side thing that I wanted to do in my story, because, you know, this is all Calvin Ball, and, like, you know, sometimes stories just go way off the deep end and go into, like, a weird arc for a while. The big issue with Thunderhead is that it's just all Nazi apologia. Like, it just, the entire thing through, it is a entire arc that's designed to reinforce an incredibly like made up non-canon interpretation of the Enclave, that the Enclave have any redeeming qualities, because in the original story their only thing that they do in the story is they show up and they're like, well, the only things we ever really get on the story is that like Calamity was chemically marked by them. He was branded an exile and traitor because he I love Calamity because like his origin story is amazing, because his whole thing is he's like he like got in with a bunch of superiors because he was like a good shooter or whatever, and he basically just used the opportunity to tell them they were all fucking awful, and they kicked him out for it, and that's amazing. That's Praxis right there. the only other thing we know about them is that they reconnect with the surface world in an attempt to exterminate 90% of its population, primarily because they're desperate for resources. Sombre took one look at those guys and went, huh, they probably have families too. We're not really getting the whole picture here. They could be good guys.
Germany had a natural right to expand.
Yes. Well, it wasn't fair that they really should have. They needed to take Czechoslovakia. There was a whole bunch of people there that were sympathetic to the German cause there. Yeah, it's
super, really an act of liberation, you see.
Yes, it's all weird apologia.
Well, no time like the present to rip off that Band-Aid and find out for ourselves. Let's
vamp forever. Can't vamp for an entire episode. But yeah, we open chapter 59, Turbulence. Oh man, just fucking garbage. Yeah, I subtitled this episode the Zebra Mythology episode.
Oh god.
Fuck this chapter.
We've had a bunch of those before, but we've always just sort of flown right over it.
Yes. Kind of, like, I'm gonna do a different thing this time, so let's see. But yeah, we start this chapter up in the sky because they have an air.
You know what's weird Zeppelin. Is that it should come pretty close to mattering. Like I'm looking back in hindsight and all like it's almost, it should be a meme for this podcast. Hey, is any of this zebra stuff gonna come up? Nope. And meanwhile, like a third of the setting is being trampled by a zebra legion.
Yeah,
like, it feels like it ought to be right. And yet,
I'm going to get into it, but Somber has committed one of the most like passé grievous sin, depending on how you look at it, of world building, of creating a bunch of lore that has no impact on the story and it's just there to be trivia. But yeah, they're flying around in the sky. This chapter is super confusing for a bunch of reasons. The first and foremost of them is, They're flying up to the sky because they got to get to Thunderhead. They got to get to Shatterbolt Tower. There's a couple of problems with this already. Big reason why they needed a fucking air blimp that was not electrically powered was because the lightning rods would go off. One of the additional problems with this though is that Blackjack is a giant ball of technology now, and that will definitely trip off the sensors. And they just don't this chapter. They just don't. We have been told multiple times in the story that you cannot break cloud cover or you will be instantly shot out of the sky, which is the reason why Glory couldn't leave the story for a dozen chapters. And you don't laugh like that, move away from the mic.
We couldn't cross a river, so we had to go through the microwave hallway in hell. We had to travel down below the earth and up through hell to get to a destination because we couldn't cross a fucking river. But now, whoops, fly straight into the lion's den. Fuck everything established about why they can't do that.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be that especially around here.
Cloud would be consistent.
Yeah, it's supposed to be that the whole, this area especially is so heavily regulated that you need, takeoff permission. Like, you need to go to a specific area that the Enclave controls and get, clearance to be able to get back up into the sky, or they will shoot you out of it with lightning. But, that just doesn't matter anymore. We have a moment that's supposed to come across as cool and wondrous, but it's not nearly as good as when it's done in the original story. Where they, breach cloud cover and they see the sun for the first time, really. That's something I've never talked about this, about topography of the setting, is that, I may have briefly mentioned on it, but this is just considered old hat to me, so it didn't even occur to me. But the entire setting every single, patch of the sky is covered with clouds because the Enclave live on top of it, right? So, most people haven't seen the sun in the setting for quite some time. And a big thematic crux of Little Pip is going into a sacrifice machine to unlock the sky, basically. That's why she's called the Lightbringer, for fuck's sakes. And it's still in this story because, it's just an aspect of the story, but, it just had never occurred to me to bring up. Because the story just never touches on it, really, except for as an in passing trivia detail. But there's a weird thing. So second thing, Lancer, the dude who shot all those zebras and is a generally bad dude, is just in the party now, I guess. He's just hanging because fuck everything.
Well, I mean, secretly, we've already established Fi. We've outsmarted Somber by a long time. He's been a part of the party for a long time now.
He's just been in hiding.
Blackjack clearly just kicked his Inviso button or whatever, and now it's on a longer cooldown. So we see him now.
But there's this weird thing where he kind of gloats about the fact that the Zebra Lands don't have the same sunlight deficiency problem, which is just a weird flex. Just, oh, we get to see the sun all the time.
At my old school.
It's just really weird. It's a weird line. But we learn a little bit more about what's going on with his father, who is the Legate. Apparently the Legate's gotten real weird and squirrely after fighting Blackjack, and Lancer's super confused about what the Legate even wants anymore, because they've apparently had a nuke for months, and the plan was for a long time that they're going to just wheel it into the core of the city and then detonate it and kill the great evil, I guess. And then after they got the nuke, he just went, no, we're going to use it for later. And then that later never came, and then he's just been getting progressively weirder for some reason, and instead is they found a bunker that they had it went into and told nobody else to come with him because it was marked with curse signs from zebras, which is very confusing, but whatever. And he came up with an army of robo soldiers, so that's what he's been using to terrorize the wastes now, is an army of weird robot zebras. So that's cool. Oh man, there's this really shitty fucking plot line that starts getting established, or thematic thoroughfare, or whatever you want to call it, thematic element that the story keeps trying to establish, is that they get into an argument about how Lancer's well, Blackjack's invincible, nothing can kill her, she always wins. And Blackjack's well, no, I don't win, I just survive and get lucky and all this other shit happens. And there's this weird theme thing that it's trying to establish here that Blackjack always wins, you know, because she's Blackjack.
I feel like I should comment, but the commentary is obvious. Like, my character is so realistic and not like that Mary Sue from the other story.
Lil Pip was overpowered because she could throw a boxcar at somebody. I can never lose and I'm a giant cyborg death machine, but I'm balanced.
Because I am literally incapable of losing. Textually yes. Incapable of being defeated.
Yes. But, you know, I'm not overpowered. There's a ridiculous thing I remember being said about the story, that the joke about Blackjack, and she has maxed out luck stat, which is just, like, really boring as a story element. So, because it just means there's no, like, it just sucks all the, like, attention out of fights if we know that Blackjack can never really, like, experience, like, proper loss, I guess. There's a weird thing, too, where, like, 21 also calls Lancer a coward and a bitch, basically, for killing all those unarmed unarmed zebras. And I can almost agree with 21 here. Like, I can contextually agree with 21 here. Like, he's right that Lancer is a prick and a baby and a child and a coward for doing those things. Like, the actual established reason why this is bad is still bad, because the big thing about the story is that, like, killing somebody in self-defense is okay, because they, you know, they're coming at you. You know, it's a stand-your-ground laws, right? If they weren't trying to attack you, then it's an execution and therefore bad. Like, that is the cut-and-dry morality of this setting, so, like, a lot of the stuff, like, doesn't read super well to me, personally, that like... Because it's really more framed like, well, if those zebras were coming at you with knives, then you would have been totally okay to shoot them. And, like, there's also just a really weird thing about, like, saying that, like, oh, you're a sniper, that means you're a coward. It's, like, just a weird, like a weird point to make.
I think it might be an element of Chud brain, except that he's excused, like... I don't understand it yet. I will have to meditate on this to, like, get a good grip of it. This is the first time where I'm not comfortable, like, making an assessment of the psychology of this, because yeah. On the one hand, it's very reminiscent of something I've heard conservatives, like, spout a lot throughout my entire life, living in the former Confederate South of this sort of, like, you duel a man looking into his eyes sort of mentality, like, that, like...
Yeah.
You don't shoot a man in the back. You shoot him in the kneecap so that he turns around, and then you shoot him in the face.
Yeah. Or he shot first, and that's why you blow him away with your meat, like AK-47.
Or at minimum, like, he was going for his gun.
That's what I mean.
Reach by, like, for it. Was, though. And yet, simultaneously, they're willing to justify, like, massive preemptive violence. Or yes. Violence in retaliation to a violation of property rights, which may be as simple as, you stepped on my land!
I had to shoot him 87 times.
Somber is not willing to justify, like, the assassination of troops preparing for an ambush, and yet he's about to justify an entire civilization gearing up for a war of extermination on a vast civilian populace.
Yes. Like heroes do. But yeah, it's specifically, like, in the like the lines of text that even describes it as the problem being one of self-defense versus cold-blooded murder. Like, it makes a clear line in the sand of what's, like, considered, like, morally okay and morally not. Which is just, like, I don't know, it's ethics I don't agree with. It's deeply sociopathic, in my opinion. Oh, man, now we get to talk about zebra mythology. Yay. Because there's just a part where they butter up Lancer a little bit when they're talking to him. And he talks about his, like, family because it's... Oh, man. So at some point we find out that his mother, Sakashi, the, like, cool storytelling zebra... And, like, he laments the fact that, like, he's... Because of the way that their family lines inherit, like, he... Like, they inherit through the mothers, so... He's not the warrior tribe. He's a different tribe, and it makes him sad. Because he wants to be a cool warrior like his dad. But, you know, because of that, they're like... Huh, you seem to know a lot about zebra mythology. Perhaps could you exposit for several paragraphs?
But why, though?
because we have to know this, I guess. So I'm going to glaze over a ton of mythology here, but the big thing to point out that I'll always make the issue that I have with this story, and the main story kind of does this to a degree, so it's not free of this sin either, but it's a lot worse in this story, that the story pits the concept of the conflict was a religious one primarily and a trade war secondarily, because the zebras believe that Luna was the ring, like, is Nightmare Moon, and equivalently their mythological identity of the devil equivalents in their religion. So they had every justification to going war with Equestria to wipe them out, because as far as they're concerned, they had become literally the nation of the devil.
The Moose-lambs hate us for our freedom.
This story tries to retcon it super hard. Oh, well, actually, the tribes think that, like all the tribes worship the sun, and so, like, when it was Celestia, it was fine, but because they got traded over for Luna, that's when everything got really bad. And, like, because there's a plot line in the original story where the zebras try to assassinate Celestia for, political reasons, this story, completely retconned that for, actually twice now at this point, that the zebras never wanted to because it would be against their religion to do so. And also we found out in a previous backstory memory retcon that the zebras never tried to assassinate her. It was Psalm that did it instead for insane reasons that make no sense. And I don't understand why Somber made this retcon outside of wanting to shoehorn in more mythological shit.
And it centers his creations.
Yes. This is so much just I wrote 10 pages of backstory on your stuff, so it's all canon, because it's all super cool. There's an insane, I'm only gonna bring these up for comedy purposes. We learn about the 13 tribes. It's actually the 12 tribes and the one tribe. This is super uncomfortably close to the 12 tribes of Israel, which is a super bad to do to your foreign invader group. So just for those keeping tally, the zebras are Chinese, Russian, African, Jewish, Taliban.
Yes, Somber. red pilling us on the Jewish, Mediterranean, Chinese, Sub-Saharan, Taliban question.
God, it's just
they're the omni non-white. They're pure foreign.
Yes, they are like in an effort it's really funny to me. It's the you tried to be good and you're even more eviler kind of moment for me, where it's like okay, well, there was a lot of propaganda about the zebras and we didn't really understand them. I know, I'll write 10 pages of backstory on them for their mythology to make them seem more intricate and more nuanced. Oops, you just made them all the foreign stereotypes. In a weird twist of fate, you've accidentally made them closer to the kind of, dark continent Africans of old pulp serials, where they were just, a weird mass of villains, but, just with more backstory. You just wrote more lore, but the lore just exists to justify why they're evil. Because Somber doesn't understand
evil, not that there's been some sort of misunderstanding. Just explicating the cartoonish evil that they were saddled with in the earlier unreliable explanation. So now we bring in a reliable narrator to confirm that yes, indeed, as evil as
get that more so. Hoped. Actually more evil, more comprehensively evil. But yeah, we learned this ridiculous mythology thing that all the tribes were the sun and the earth had children, and all of the children were conceived in different places, and that all created a tribe of zebras that have a specific genetically predestined gimmick to them. For comedy purposes, I've written them all down. For comedy purposes, I will name all of the zebra tribes, and we'll get into why it's a joke in a second. But there is the Achu, the Zenkari, the Atori, the Karnali, the Mendi, Eshetek, the Shani, the Ora, the Tampahani, the Logos, and the Romani. which just, like, I don't know if any of those names outside of, like, Romani is very obvious what it's making reference to, and Logos just means word, but I don't know the reference to the other ones, but I'm sure they're just a mishmash of, like, Google translated names.
One of them is very, like, North American First Nations.
Yeah, because
Achu is a real heck of a
real heck of a
fucking, like, blackface old rocking bullwinkle sort of gag.
Yeah, because it sounds like a sneeze. They even make that joke. They make the sneeze joke, which is
All right. So yeah. A real confirmation that they are the omni-brown, the omni-foreign.
Yes.
Among their ranks is the non-Western world.
Yes. Which is weird, too. It's also kind of weird, too, because, like, natives do exist within this setting. They just, like, they're never touched on. But what I meant by comedy purpose for this, we never have to learn these names. None of these names will ever matter again. They get brought up in this chapter. They're vaguely referenced by characters, but it never matters who's from what tribe. This is all pointless. There's a dumb line about, like, it's like, well, the Legate's an Achu, and that's why he's such a strong warrior. And then, like, Rampage brings up that he's not because he doesn't fight like one, because I think the zebra in her, Shuja, is an Achu. But Romani really stuck out to me. It's just, it's very, like, North American writing. Like, oh, it's okay, I can totally just put a Roma equivalent in my setting. This won't come across really, like, tone-deaf. And there's the 13th evil tribe, which is the Star Katarai, which just sounds like a very Doom, like Dune, not Doom, like Dune. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds like
It's incredibly... Latiny.
But yeah, none of those matter.
I'm just thrown by the, like, saccharine and yet ugly ugliness of it. Like, the Achu is a real fucking tone sitter. Like, a real... okay, whatever. Yeah, so
There's one other... Like, there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about this, too. One of the things I unfortunately have to talk about is Predatory, and I'm not super big fan of that. The really big bummer about this is that this is also super reductive to the storytelling of the story. This is another one of those Fies writing corner. This is one of the things I really have a huge issue with writing, like, world-building style writing, where people make a bunch of races or a bunch of tribes and stuff like that. Is they just make it so that, like, every member of that tribe is representative of whatever, like, gimmick that particular tribe has. And that makes, like, the characters just a lot weaker. They talk about how, like, Sakashi is a Zenkari, and Zenkari are known as the storytellers, which means that Sakashi doesn't have a character. This is just the thing her tribe does, which is tell stories. Which is just, like, just boring writing. It's just really reductive and unnecessary. Like 101, like, you should, like, tribes aren't very interesting to readers because it makes all of the characters, like, decisions basically just be, oh, this is just the thing that my tribe is known for. It's like, oh yeah, the Achu is really good at fighting, no shit, because it's the fighting tribe. Like, it's just very boring writing.
Imagine a world in which a nation or city or what have you is known solely for their inability to shut up. to not stop reminiscing.
Yeah. my entire clan is that uncle that's a little drunk at the party and, like, has to tell you, like, every dirty story he's ever heard.
And that is the sole personality trait of an entire entire block of people, an entire demographic.
But the other problem I have with this is they also bring up the concept of predatory. We've heard the word predator a bunch of times, and I've never brought it up because it's never been relevant up to this point. One of the things that they always refer, like, predator, like, we can make the connection because the way they describe it, the predators are the zebras that turncoated and, like, in solidarity dyed their stripes red. And to the equestrian nation. And the problem with that I have is that it's specifically, we learn more of the backstory behind the predators in this chapter, and it's really worryingly written. They're not traitors. The Praetor was the name they used for people who were, like, rebelling against the Kaiser. Meaning that, like, they're people that were just making, like, they're, like they're, there's a, like, you're gonna have to, like, come with me on this, but there's a Kaiser? Very...
Is that, am I to assume that's the title for the head of all zebra kind?
Yes, it's the Kaiser.
There's a Kaiser below whom are legates?
It's not
legates?
The German Kaiser, it's the, yeah, it's the...
This fucking stew. The Kaiser, and it has assisted by his immediate subordinate, the Shogun. What the fuck are we?
Well,
even
no, it's Kaiser as in like. No. I think you're immediately spelling it wrong in your head. Sorry,
it's the German word for king.
No. The Kaiser's the proper pronunciation of Caesar. That's where I think we're getting into the problem. But anyways, the Kaiser. Kaisar. They were people that resisted against all that shit, so they were, you know, essentially just, like, protesters and shit. But the problem I have with this particular thing is that it frames the concept of resistance against your nation. The only track for that is to join the immediate opposing nation and, like, buy into their culture and customs. Which is super bad.
You don't like it, leave.
Yeah, it's a very like Americanized way of looking at things. Like it's very much the like action movie. Like it's like, oh well, these people don't agree with the terrorists. Well, what's going on? I was like, well, then now they're wearing American flags. Like that's the crazy thing.
And similarly. Well, look at that person there. They pretend to be a patriot, but they keep talking all this sedition. And wouldn't you know it, by the end of the film, they were a Russian agent.
Yeah. We're going to get into sympathizers later on. We're going to get into sympathizers as well. Like, there are zebra sympathizers in the story, too.
Just a sheer, like, nationalistic take it or leave it. You're literally either with us or against us. If you're against the regime that you're in, clearly the inevitable only place for you is to swear total loyalty, ride or die, for that nation's opposition.
Yes, the only way you can protest America is to join Russia. I guess it's very like nonsense. It's also like a very complicated colonialist mindset that like people that become more like the imperialist nation that's like taking over are like the good ones essentially. Like it's like in no uncertain terms, the Predators chemically permanently alter their stripes to be red. It's like the equivalent of getting a like American flag tattoo on your face to show off that you're no commie, you're no Muslim, you're no Taliban, you're a God-fearing American now. What's the term for it? It's not localized, it's
naturalized.
Naturalized, that's the word. You're naturalized to the government, which is just real bad. It's bad writing.
It is something I would have to expect to see in a Ben Shapiro novel. It's could like saw the light of Jesus, turned away from the Muslimic faith, and tattooed an American flag on their forehead.
Yes, and you wouldn't be allowed to stay in the country if you didn't have a tattoo, like a American flag tattoo on your face. That's the framing of it. That which is also non-canon. Like none of that's true. Fall Equestria presupposes a far darker take for zebras in that they were just sent to ghettos and concentration camps. Because, you know, that's the way it actually usually go. But, you know, whatever. Story's bad. I wanted to bring up all the tribes because you can look at all the tribes and how never a single name on this board is going to come up again. Like, it's... And also because of the goofy
name. Just an opportunity to make achoo jokes for a page and a half.
Well. Also, I wanted to point out the fact that how much they feel like fantasy. Like it feels very much like fantasy world building to me. Of like the story stopping dead to be like, oh, and here are the 12 tribes of the zebras and all of their cultural distinctions and all the unique qualities of them. And like, but like, you never, like, Lancer has been the closest we've ever had to a zebra, because like, Rampage doesn't count in my mind. Like, Rampage is like, at best, like a charitable interpretation of Rampage is that Rampage is the like 1/16th Cherokee princess like person, like, because she's 1/6 zebra, but because of complicated soul transfer nonsense, so she doesn't really count.
She is that 1/16th Cherokee princess person who has a dream catcher above a picture of a horse over her bed.
Yes,
who takes it very seriously. And as played by Whoopi Goldberg has been in the party periodically, but
yes, and it really sucks. It's just, it's one of those things, like, it's a thing that is always stuck out about the story to me. Like it, you know, there's all sorts of problems with the story, obviously, but like, one of the things that really sticks out to me is how much zebra lore is in this contrasted with how much they do anything in the story. Like, it's, this reminds me, like, this is a very specific issue with like Tolkien and elves. Like, that's what it really reminds me of like,
the,
we're gonna learn all this
the post-Tolkien world. Like, Tolkien was pretty bad about it, but like, after him has been so much worse that like, all right, well, we're only in the course of the story, we're only ever going to come across like one, maybe two kinds of elf, but take heart, dear listener. There are 13 breeds of elf, and we're gonna talk about all of them. The sky elves, the sun elves, the moon elves, the sea elves, the deep sea elves, neither of which live in or on the sea, but near it.
The moon elves, the fairy elves, the human elves, the orc elves. It's all elves. Yeah, it's, and but like, we never meet a single one of them. Like, that's the frustrating part. It is again, Fye's writing corner. Like, if you want to, like, if you're gonna write lore, it has to impact your story or it's trivia. So and this doesn't count. Like, having your primary antagonist being Zebra Man, King of the Zebras, like, doesn't count because we don't see him in the story that often. He's actually in very little of it. So learning all this lore doesn't really like impact our understanding of anything in the context of the story better. Like, Blackjack isn't better or more nuanced or more capable by knowing that there was a tribe called the Romani or the Ora. Like, it's because we're never going to meet either of those peoples. So there's no purpose for it. It's just, it's dead air. It's pointless writing. Oh man. So I think I got through everything I want to talk about zebras. So let's talk about Nazi apologism. Yay. So, they get through all that conversation, and then to prove how completely off, like, pointless and arbitrary, and how much the story just doesn't, nothing matters in the story from point to point, a bunch of raptors show up, and like, thing I've never had to go into, I guess, up until now. There are, like, Enclave have skyships, and they're basically like clouds with metal nailed to them. We've seen vertibucks in the story a bunch of times, but we've never seen like the bigger ones for the most part, which are the raptors, which Somber didn't seem to understand that raptors are supposed to be vertebrates, so he made a new classification of ones that are smaller for some reason. But raptors are these big, imposing skyships that are super deadly. They're not as big as Thunderheads, but Thunderheads are like a warship or like an aircraft carrier, essentially. Thunderheads are super cool. No relation to the city Thunderhead. There's a classification of ship called a Thunderhead, which okay. Is very, very confusing. KCAT made Thunderheads a thing, then Somber made a city called Thunderhead, which...
Great.
Which could have been interesting if it was like, oh yeah, like, it was a flotilla of Thunderheads we've made into a city. And like, that's why it's called Thunderhead. That is almost understandable, though you'd still be kind of confusing. But it's not the case. It's dumber than that. But anyways, we see a raptor shows up, and a bunch of other raptors show up, and they're like, oh, we're hosed. And then like, that, like, one of those moments where I still kind of like, I like some of the character of Blackjack, if you ignore all the aspects of Blackjack. You know, they've got, you know, the raptors all have their guns guns pointed at Blackjack, and Blackjack's standing on the top of the airship, and she just like radios to them and is like, "I'm Captain Blackjack, prepare to be boarded." Which is like, I wish this character was in the story more often. I like bathtub drunk Blackjack's what I want, not like, you know, rapist Blackjack. But then the story gets to suck a whole bunch more after this, and I'm not a big fan. So yeah, they get like wheeled into an interrogation room with a like with one of the generals, a general named Stormchaser, who sucks. They don't specifically suck, but the tone of this scene sucks a whole lot. So we find out that they're Navarro ponies, which is a whole kettle of fish by itself. But Navarro is like the big military like city state within the Enclave. They're the ones with all the guns and all the military tech and all the shit. They effectively run the Enclave. And Stormchaser is one of their generals. And she's like the tone of the scene is supposed to be that you're supposed to like think she's really cool because Blackjack like literally says so. She like commands all of her soldiers really effortlessly. And this is like the brigade of Enclave that like we've been hanging out with that are all fun guys. They're like Boomer and Twister, and they're all of like fun names, and they've all been just kind of goofs. And Stormchaser is like basically this, like cold, like she's not cold, she's kind of motherly, and Blackjack like relates it to her own mom. And like it's important to remember, audience, this story is trying to do that thing that Star Wars did, where like all the admirals and stuff like that are all these like, you know, educated business gentlemen. They're all British naval, like the, in the book, like especially like the books really did this a lot, like hammered home the idea that like the Star Wars Empire wasn't like, you know, they weren't Nazis. They were prim and proper British gentlemen. And the story, like the scene, really reeks of that, like because like, you know, she's all motherly. She's drinking tea. Like she's supposed to come across as like a collected naval officer, but like, these characters are fascists. Like, we know they're fascists. They are the most fascist. Like, this isn't like Thunderhead, who's kind of neoliberal. This is Navarro. Like, Navarro is the like deep, deep fascist ethno state of the Enclave. So like, they are talking to like not just like any Nazi. They're talking to like that one of the heads of the Nazis. Like one of the like premier generals of the Nazi military.
Another thing worth taking a lot of note of is that the British Empire committed like a lot of war crimes, like a world record setting number of war crimes. Like
that is a good point to bring up. I just mean like the very rehabilitated like tone that like that of like prim and proper British, you know, stiff up.
Yes, and that is true of those war criminals. The interesting thing about Britain is that it is throughout its sort of recent history in the industrialized era been a factory for psychopaths. Like the British boarding school system that produces those officers is a hotbed of like bullying and terror that produces out the other end either deeply broken people or deeply broken people who need to fill the emptiness inside
with
blood but who are extremely polite and have extremely extremely refined table manners. Funny enough, and a extremely dignified and pleasant tea time compatriot, British general is the very model, is the very portrait of a genocidal monster.
Yes, but it's just, I just really want to remind people,
but Somber doesn't see it that way. Like Somber, yeah, like is a baby brain who can only conceive of a bad person as having though the traits of a poor person, like a low and crude manners.
It's a Mad Max of Helen, and like that's the worst part about all of this. Like this scene could be super chilling. Like it's. You know, we don't get much experience with Navarro types in the original story, but they're all bastards. Like that is the defining trait of them. They're all bastards. Most of them are related to Calamity for some reason.
Well, because he's tie into the story.
Yeah, but it's very funny in the original story when like most of like the aerial aces or like King Nazi of Murder Mountain are all related to Calamity. It's just very funny to me. But this scene could be very chilling because you could be like, oh yeah, she's very motherly, she's drinking tea, but like she's still a Nazi.
It could be a Tarantino. It could be any given scene from Inglourious Basterds where we all have to sit here and politely have tea with this fucking psychopath
who eventually the bottom falls. Yeah, the bottom just falls out and we're all dead. Kind of moment just happens. But no, she's played straight. She is supposed to be like the very model of a modern major general, and is. It's wild. It's super tone deaf. It really tries to rehabilitate Nevarro of all places. Like Nevarro's opening gambit is to nuke the main city, to destroy the capital because they're trying to like create a new empire. Like for fuck's sakes. It's not super great. There's also like the really annoying thing where this is another scene to talk about how cool Blackjack is because like. You know, they do the joke of they just unload a bunch of intel and she just reads through it because Blackjack's like, well, I'm not anyone terribly special. Like, I'm just trying to stop Thunderhead from killing everybody. And she's like, oh, not special, are we? And just reads out the laundry list of all the cool things Blackjack has done in the story and how she's this crazy invincible super killer. It's just to talk about how cool Blackjack is again, which I'm just tired of these scenes. Like, I've always been tired of these scenes, like... But yeah. I'm extra.
It's pretty exhausting at a certain point. Like
it's extra tone deaf to be like having a Nazi like and I, because the, you know in the original like in Fallout 3 like they're like all the Nazi like the Enclave officers are all dressed in like basically like Confederate colored Nazi uniforms because like the Enclave aren't subtle. So like you got this like fucking Confederate general / Nazi general. Talking about how cool Blackjack is, like, that itself is kind of a form of comedy. Like, that is, like, being praised by a monster should come across as kind of, like, darkly comedic, but it's all played straight, so, like, the scene is really...
And, yeah. I don't know, the biggest thing that frustrates me is that it's incredibly masturbatory and it keeps happening. Like, Sombra cannot keep his hands out of his pants.
To masturbate over his character, who he also doesn't like. There's a stupid line that I just don't even want to talk about, but they talk about the ethics of soldiers and how, like, soldiers are different, like, because they talk about the conversation of, like, soldiers versus security, which has a, like, very, very tone-deaf argumentation about it that, like, especially in the modern age, like, this is aged very poorly, that, like, it's like, well, soldiers have to do what they're told, but, like, since you're security, like, you know, you're just here to protect the people, like... Which, like, have you met a cop? Like, seriously, Somber, have you met a cop? Like legitimately, like there is a reason why we say all cops are bastards. I mean,
I think I've heard through the rumor one of his parents is in law enforcement. Like, he has, but he's never... Wild guess here. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he's probably a white male. And yeah, so he's never probably. Been, like, he's never had a confrontation with a police officer.
Yes.
Who is on duty? Like he has never been stopped. He has never had to be the subject of control. Like,
but yeah, it's like thing is like I have very mixed feelings about soldiers myself. There's a lot of complicated stuff about the ethics of soldiers, like soldiers versus the like military industrial complex are two different conversations, as far as I'm concerned. But this scene where it's trying to say that like, well, soldiers aren't blood monsters. They're just doing what they're told, and like, but also like, no, the Enclave isn't like the Enclave isn't regimented. Like, stop thinking like this. Like. Like, a big mistake that the story makes is that the Enclave, like, actual soldiers, but it's been 200 years, that, like, and the chain of command is completely broken down. Like, they're not so much soldiers as they are, like, cosplayers, basically, with a lot of military technology. Like they're
descendants of soldiers who've been marching in circles for 200 years.
Yes, with broken old rust bucket technology. Like this like one of the things that really sticks out to me about this particular chapter is how much this chapter really strains the idea. Oh, well, it doesn't make any sense why the Enclave could be defeated by a bunch of dirt ponies, because, like, they're all service dwellers with, you know, old guns, and, like, the Enclave is a rubbish military machine. It's, like, it's super not, though. Like, it's very obvious they're not. They get wiped out by six idiots and a zombified Pegasus. Like, they're clearly not regimented, but, like, the story goes out of its way to establish that, like, oh, well, there's a bunch of things going on in the background to make that all make sense, because it's not realistic to me that the Enclave would be defeated so easily. There's a weird line that, like, is racist, but it's not trying to be, and it's, which is the funniest part about it.
When was this published? By the way, sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt. I hope you can keep your train of thought, but when was this part of the story put out?
Like around 2015.
You know, that's really a long time after we put boots on the ground in Afghanistan.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but it's definitely within the modern era, like within the last decade all this stuff has come out. So yeah, it's super
really
tone,
funny
yeah.
when you're hard on for the military industrial complex and saluting our troops is so intense that you somehow blot out the evidence of history, the current events of what it looks like when a hyper ultra bloated mega funded global superpower goes up against people who have their entire lives known the struggle and horrors of war.
Yes. It's just Sombra doesn't understand asymmetrical warfare at all. Like, and no one does in this community, but like Sombra is a great example of like a thought leader within this community that doesn't understand asymmetrical warfare, and therefore it trickles down to everybody. And everyone establishes how strong the Enclave should be because the Enclave are the American military. That's their they are literally like Kit Kat like apparently literally has like said about how they are intentionally a totalitarian fascist state that is modeled after the American military, and like there is a lot of examples of the American military like falling over itself trying to blow places up and it can't. But sure, this line I was going to come across earlier was that like there's a line that comes across as super racist, and it's not meant to be. It's just meant to talk about how cool Blackjack is, because they like they establish what their plan is that they're going to like go in covertly because they have the airship to get into the Thunderhead, because they're convinced that Lighthoof's actual plan is to either fire the bio missile, like the biological warfare missiles at Navarro, or get caught doing it and be saved, like in a very complicated PR stunt that like would look like make Thunderhead look better by like catching this terrorist and stopping him or whatever. So they want to stop him from doing that, but they're going to do it all covertly. So they're going on behalf of the Navarro soldiers, which doesn't make any sense in the first place. But there's a line where Blackjack like goes through this whole cool plan that they're gonna do, and like Storm Chaser is like, man, if you were only born a Pegasus, which like is racist, but it's like not meant to sound like that. Like it's just meant to be like one of those like oh gosh, like if only you were under my tutelage, I would have loved to have taken you under my wing. But like it just comes across as like really racist because like. The Enclave is an ethno-state. Like, yeah. Like, if the writing was better, like, if Storm Chaser was, like, more maliciously like an actual Nazi, this line would have come across, like, a little bit better. Because, you know, you it could be one of those situations where she's like, no, she actually does think better of Blackjack than she does the average servicer. So in her mind, a compliment would be going, oh, if only, like, you got the heart, your surface body beats out the heart of a Pegasus. Like, it's meant to come across as a compliment, you know, you're one of the good ones, but like because this story is really trying to establish that like these are the not bad Enclavers, because they also get rushed down by a bunch of like bratty commanders who all have their own ships and like demand Blackjack is killed on the spot because they think she's the one that fired the nuke for some complicated reasons. And this is just to show off how cool and awesome Storm Chaser is by basically just like fucking with them and then like giving Blackjack and crew enough time to escape on their airship before like these bratty impotent children commanding officers can radio back to HQ to get what they want. There's a line that is very hilarious in context where Storm Chaser is like, I want the Enclave to be better. The Enclave isn't a clubhouse for overprivileged idiots with war machines. But it is, though. Like, that's...
explicitly.
It's explicitly that. It's like, everyone in their position of power got that way through, like, bloodlines, not because of merit in the first place. But yeah, we're actually getting pretty close to the ending. Like, this has basically been conversations, the chapter. Like, nothing of intrigue has happened. They also, apparently, Dusk, who is Morning Glory's sister that Blackjack almost murdered during that one time she had that freakout, is apparently in a medical bay on this ship, specifically. So they go and check her out, and there's a kind of cute moment where her and her sister convene over it, and like the plan is they're going to take Dusk with them because she needs proper medical treatment at an actual hospital and not just being in a medical bay. So they're going to drag a like medical patient with them to this journey.
Great. Into the heat of violence. Like, wait a minute. into what they are going to turn into a war zone.
Yes.
Like, have they seen what their plan is besides, like, go to Nazi town and have a party? Like,
I'm gonna play it weird here for this scene because this made me like flip my lid with logical nonsense and consistency with the rest of the story. But like, so they're supposed to be like on a stealth mission, effectively, right? Like people aren't supposed to know that they're coming. So Blackjack hears about a dumb thing. Like, she finds like a note somewhere about zebra sympathizers, or connected to an organization called Four Stars, which is something I'm not going to go into in this story. But the only reason why I wanted to bring it up, and it's really funny, is like, I don't know about that. Maybe Spike will know about that. And just like opens a broadcast channel to Spike to talk to him. In this story, it's established that like broadcast frequencies are super easy to just hack. And because, you know, there's that whole joke where she, like, talks about her sex life on radio, and everybody in the wasteland hears it. So, like, it just seems really insane and dangerous to be like, hi, person who's in hiding, can you tell me about this information on this open broadcast frequency? you know, while we're in open air within striking distance of the lightning rods. Okay, thanks. It just made me lose it. It's just the stupidest thing.
Sir, we're getting a
thing.
Signal. Wait, we're triangulating it to... Oh my god, sir! This is something we've been looking for...
It's fucking insane. It's just super, super nonsense. But yeah, they land. Which really threw me for a loop. Because I thought that they were, like, flying their way up to there. Like, they broke cloud cover and everything. But they land because they're gonna go drop Lancer off. Because I guess he's not coming with them to the sky. Because they're like, oh yeah, actually, Sakashi is like alive, and so is your sister. And he's like, oh man, I got a chance at redemption. I'm gonna go hang out with them. Bye forever, friends. I learned valuable lessons, I guess.
Hey, maybe you could take this person who's dying, who needs. As long as we're dropping you off at a place that is presumably full of civilization and has a hospital in it or some sort of clinic, maybe you could do that. No.
No. We don't have time for that. We have just enough time to get you off the boat. But yeah, and then we fly into the sky, and we get like the chapter closes with like a lot of prose about like their run up to Thunderhead, which admittedly is pretty decently impressive, like because they like fly over these like cloud factories that are producing like this endless wall of cloud over top of this, like, you know, the Shadow Bolt Tower is this superstructure that is so tall it breaks cloud cover, so it's literally like miles straight up into the air. We don't get to see what Thunderhead looks proper, but we get kind of like the the like welcome to Thunderhead kind of like dramatic flair, and then the chapter ends. So yeah, we're finally actually at Thunderhead 2020. Next chapter will be there till the end of this book. So gird your loins, folks. Hope you're ready for just fucking nonsense. Like just crazy nonsense. Just as a very small teaser of the upcoming plot lines, look forward to more cybernetics, clear references to Metal Gear Solid, references to BioShock Infinite, an entire anime made about Blackjack's life. Look forward to all that and more in Thunderhead 2020.
Oh yeah! You paid for the whole seat, but you'll probably need the one next to it as well to lie down.
But yeah, weird, is there anything better we could be reading?
Oh god, I wish. Surely something can come to mind. I'm looking around. Man, the only thing I can think of is how much I fucking hate the Iron Fist Netflix series. I just feel like...
Which is like a non-recommendation.
Yeah, anti-recommendation, you know? you know what else you shouldn't do? That.
don't read, don't watch like pretty much all of the like Marvel anythings. And I don't like the Marvel cinematic universe very much.
Yeah, the Marvel movies, I've been completely disenchanted with as of Endgame. Like it, like the spell is broken. I can no longer like. I was along for the ride for a while, but now I'm completely burnt out on it. But I can tell you that at least the first six episodes of the Daredevil Netflix show was solid gold, pretty great. Yes, that's it. If you have a Netflix account or some sort of piratic implication inclination. Check out like the first five or six episodes of the Daredevil Netflix series, and none of the episodes of the sequel series.
Yes, or the second season, or like any.
That's
of the
recommendation.
Other shows.
Got no mail this week.
I'm trying to think. Oh, I think I guess I could give some sort of recommendation. Fucking Kentucky Route Zero finally like actually released its final act a couple of months back, and I like highly recommend that game. That's. It's if you're like me, which is as a Canadian, I'm obsessed with like Americana as a mythology kind of archetype, and it's an interesting sort of foray into America's myths about itself. Similarly, Where the Water Tastes Like Wine is also about this as well, and I recommend that as well. They're both great. So go check out Kentucky Route Zero since it's finally finished. And Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, which is also an interesting game. I recommend a lot of video games, but that's just because it's like the media I primarily consume.
Yeah.
But I try to recommend like more story-driven experiences for people. Okay. But yeah, no mail, sadly.
No mail, but you out there, dear listener, can fix that by sending a message to weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. Failing that, you can reach out to either of our Twitters, mine, at WeirdingtonE, or Fi's incredibly not safe for work. We really have to do Thunderhead
next
week.
We
really
to.
Gotta go there. We gotta
trip the light. Fantastic. We gotta push all engines to forward.
I don't want to. I'm starting to think this might have all been some sort of terrible mistake.
But I couldn't come home in the dark.